I guess whether it ended well or not is a matter of perspective.
Yeah, well, it's the last time I get to use that joke. Yeah. Pretty sure I've done that on every single Hunger Games review, so I just wanted to dust it off for this one.
Aww, you've done the full feast.
I know. Everything comes full circle.
Everything's the final course of this Hunger Games meal is out on the table, and we are doing our highly suspect review of Hunger Games Mocking Hallows
Mockingbird
Revenge
Part 2.
Tribution Part 2.
Revenge Tribution?
I don't know. The subtitles, I get very
That's
lost.
That's like one of those Revenge of the Month Club type
yes,
things?
Is yes.
Like, yeah, just kind of box full of revenge. In the-
Two Hunger, Two Furious.
And the Sorcerer's Stone.
And the Sorcerer's Stone, absolutely. I'm Brian.
Chris, great to be back after my super awkward debut.
Woo!
Great to be back! Yay!
JC.
I'm the other Chris.
Elliot.
Also super awkward.
Also, that was the most awkward. Elliot.
Well, I didn't know we get lead-ins now. I mean, I'm going to have fucking interest music next time.
And now, from Ball State University, Brian Talsbury.
See, you're going for that. I'm going for the Stone Cold.
Oh, dude, he had the best entrance music ever.
You know, just for the future, let's just call me Herman.
Herman.
Honestly, Herman is fine.
And you have
it's like high school over again.
And you have a fine head.
I appreciate
that. Wow.
That's
Herman's
head. That is
references.
A fantastic reference. Thank
I
you, sir.
I with Herman Munster,
when Suzanne Collins wrote The Hunger Games, she was really writing for an audience that was both 12 and fans of Herman's head. So, no one, I guess,
no, that's
is
me.
What I'm trying to say. Oh, okay. There you go.
You're thinking of Inside Out.
I am thinking of Inside Out. That's very true. That is very true.
Yeah, so this concludes. I love the intro lady. It's like the final chapter. I'm like... Bullshit! Because they've already announced they're working on prequels.
They're making a theme park.
For loud.
What's that? What? The little bit noshy games? Like, what is the prequel to this? Well,
I wonder if it's going to be like, because my phone keeps auto-correcting Hunger Games to Ginger Games.
Ginger Games?
Yeah,
is
and
that
so
like
I wonder.
A porn parody or something?
Maybe. So I wonder if that's what the prequel will be.
No, it's how the Weasleys cut down their population size.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like, one of you got. Hey. They just bring a POQ, make it quick.
You realize we may not live long enough to see it, but there probably eventually will be a film that crosses over Harry Potter, The Hunger Games, Star Wars, everything into one, like, really irritating branding session.
At some point down the road, Disney's going to be like, we're going to buy all of this shit.
Yeah.
And we're going to make one movie.
And Indiana Jones will make a cameo.
Well, then they'll buy Doctor Who.
At that point, it's played by Justin Bieber.
Guys, if you can get sushi at a gas station, you extrapolate that out, eventually all franchises will be one.
Well, see, but you just had the perfect analogy. Just because you can get sushi at a gas station doesn't mean you should get sushi at a gas station.
Just because you can break a final movie into two parts doesn't mean you should.
Yes, very key. I was going to say, previously on Hunger Games, Katniss acted kind of like a selfish bitch and almost threw the entire world under a bus because she couldn't decide who she liked more.
I don't know which boy I want to be with more. It's like... There is a revel. People are dying. They've leveled your entire district. You might want to get on, you know. But these are both so cute, and I don't know.
To be fair to Katniss, she has, like, and it's not even PETA. She has Gale coming behind her, like, every 30 minutes. I guess you
Phrasing.
Don't want me.
Phrasing, I know.
He wishes he could come behind her. But, like, he's like, I guess you don't want me. It's like, oh, my God, shut the fuck up.
You totally bought into the teeny bopper side of that one.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just like, shut the fuck up. Like, there are better things to worry about.
Yeah, because at the same time, she spends most of these movies yelling at PETA saying, get up off the floor. Why are you still on the floor?
Why are you such a pussy? Get the fuck up.
It's like, everything knocks that guy over. Yeah. And then every once in a while, he does something mildly heroic.
Yeah.
Usually
mildly heroic could describe a lot of the characters in this entire franchise.
But I think that's what's great about the movie is that they address the fact that of that old romance in part one, and that where they even mock it in the beginning of the film, and then they get to the point where it's like, okay, now it's about the war, it's about trying to kill Snow, and that's why I really identified this film. That's why I really liked it.
Well, this is the meat of that of the third book.
Yeah.
It's like they could have compressed the entire first movie into like 15 minutes and just made a long.
But I enjoyed that, you know, shit. I think it was a really great thing that they split it in two because you got to examine a little bit more of the character. Like,
yeah, but the sides that were really annoying and no one wanted to.
I will agree that we saw more sides to them, but they were sides I didn't give a shit about.
No, but the stuff with Finnick, like, that, you didn't get any of that in the book, and I thought it was really valuable. The stuff with, and this is how I'm so angry that even I had to say this, the black guy from District 13, the soldier, who we never learned his fucking name. I'm just going to call him Remy Danton. That's who he is. He's Remy fucking Din.
That's who I thought he was.
I think he was actually a prawn.
Yeah, he's listed as Token
because he's from District 13.
It's just like I don't remember him at all from the books, but. Surprise, surprise, he's one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, the book's constantly like, did I mention there's a black guy here too? Yeah, there's a black guy. Don't worry about it.
In the future, there's still diversity.
Yeah.
I think this was the movie that finally allowed me to see the full scope of who was at war here. It's basically Dust Bowl farmers versus extras in every Tim Burton movie. Like, that's how I would define, like, the citizens of the capital versus the citizens of every other district. Is that the citizens of the capital look like they're all, like, from the Saturday Evening Post, and all the citizens of the capital look like they're on their way to an Alice in Wonderland cosplay.
No, you're completely right. There was a brother in that crowd that looked like, his hair looked like a fucking tree. Like,
yeah.
It's just like...
You mean Ruby Rod? Yeah, what are you doing here, Ruby?
Like, I feel like that old song, "Hey Negro, what's up with your fro? Like, what's wrong with you?"
There was an Alamo pre-show before this. They had a bit that I thought called it on that. It was like they're showing, like, narrating the film, but from the future, distant future.
Yeah.
It showed Katniss with Elizabeth Banks' character, Effie Trinket. It's like, here Katniss has a conversation with a bowl of potpourri.
It's very true.
It's very true.
I mean, it definitely, you know, we talk about these stark differences. It wears this young adult influence on its sleeve. Because young adult does like to use these obvious metaphors to get across their point. Because, I mean, what I took from it is that the capital is supposed to be, for lack of a better word, the superpower of America. And we're so mired in what we do and, like, all this high fashion. The other people barely surviving. It's sort of ham-fisted, but if you're trying to get to that audience, you sort of have to ride it that stark.
It's definitely distrustful of power in general, which is the thing I like about the series. Especially the way this one goes, where it's like, honestly... Anybody who wants to be leader real bad is probably the last person who should be leader.
Well, and it also wears its class warfare metaphors on its sleeve so hard they might as well be cufflinks.
Well, they're patches.
This movie really does push for... It's almost like Suzanne Collins is like, I'm going to write Tolstoy for tweens.
Yeah.
No, like, that's what I'm going for here.
That being said, that's a lot better than a lot of the other tween books that are out there.
I guess that's true, but I guess my problem with the movies is that I didn't believe any of it. I don't know. I feel like we spent so much time with our scope so narrowed on, you know, I mean, if you think about the last two movies, like this one and the previous one, we spent a lot of time in bunkers. We spent a lot of time underground and not really getting a full sense of the fight and what's going on. In fact, two of the biggest set pieces here, two of the biggest, most important battles happen off screen. They're just done by the time we get around to it. Like, the whole collapsing of... I'm sorry, it's called the Nut? Really? Come on. The whole, like, mountain stronghold. Katniss is trying to get her nut, which is my problem with the first movie.
It's a little bit messy sometimes, and stuff goes everywhere.
But see, that's a metaphor for what Katniss is trying to do the whole time. She just
stay out of fighting?
She just can't decide who to get a nut with.
So, like, that happens, and then, like, they're gonna storm the Capitol building, and then there's an explosion. She wakes up, and it's like, oh, it's over. And I'm like, wait... Over. Like, this was all leading up to this moment. It would have been like if the battle for Hogwarts, Harry, like, got knocked out at the beginning and they woke up and went, oh, Voldemort's dead. We're fine. Don't worry about it.
And I see what you're saying. That's annoying, but I think it was serving the story. They were trying to illustrate that, you know, this entire story to me is just very anti-war. It's anti...
It's very pacifist, no question.
Maybe anti-war is the wrong word, but it's very much showing... Look, you can want to go to war, and that's great, and you can want to fight for it, but there are concrete consequences for what's going to happen, and they don't shy away from that. The very fact that... Okay, spoilers. Can we do spoilers?
We'll make this a spoiler review.
Okay. Spoiler. Okay. Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. We've told you, stop whining.
Well, thematically, the only reason she even went into the damn Hunger Games in the first place... is to save her little sister. That is the entire reason. She didn't care about the district. She didn't give a fuck. Second movie, she just wanted to save her family again. Didn't give a fuck about the rest of them. She still really didn't care until, like, this movie. And everything she's trying to do, everything she's putting up with, and Primrose ends up getting killed by the person that she was supposedly trying to help her because it's war. And war, to quote Crimson Tide, is self-serving. it's just going to perpetuate itself.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. I understand what you're saying there. You're going, like this whole time, she's actually been quite selfish in her reasons for being involved.
Yeah,
I think that's actually very much on the surface, that she's been, look, I'm just trying to protect the people I love. I don't care about this bigger thing. And, you know, in the last movie, is all about her, sort of the remains of that, like, she's still really selfish at her core.
But she's coming to
it. But she's getting that this is bigger. And then this movie, which is about her going, acknowledging, okay, this is bigger than any of us. And then she actually loses what she got into this in the first place for.
Yeah, right. Just to show you
which
that.
Which I think actually makes a lot of sense.
And it's very affecting, because it's like, it shows you that no matter how right you think you are, the world and how shit happens doesn't give a fuck. If people are going to die if a bomb hits them, it's not going to be, well, I really want to save them. Once you unleash war, that's just going to mushroom. You can't control it.
Well, at the same time, it's like balancing that whole, like, you know, like, okay, so how does one approach war then in that sake? Are we willing to maybe not win some stuff because we're not willing to take the nastier side of
things?
No,
and that's important, because I feel like this is a good lesson for you.
It's somewhat ambiguous morally in saying, well, what do you think?
But that's great, because it doesn't present this rah-rah, jingoistic, like, Rambo picture that we're going to just go in there and sort it all out and nothing's ever going to happen.
No, actually, I liked that about it as well.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think that's the thing that spoke to me, is that it had the balls to, in a big budget movie, never really drift away from that and just show everything's great. They even, like, take that to task with all these propos, showing that a lot of what you're seeing in war is bullshit. Like,
now, funny enough, though, all that being said,
sorry, I didn't mean to fill
all that. All that, and a side of albino sewer zombies.
I liked the albino sewer zombies.
I liked
zombies.
Them too.
Yeah, nice to see the monsters from The Descent are still getting work.
Yeah, I thought that was the only one that thought that. I was like, they look like The Descent.
They look like The Descent monsters.
The production designer was basically like, I like aliens and I like The Descent.
Yeah, let's just combine those two. All that being said, I do think this is actually one of the better chapters in this series, but the bulk of this movie is this, like, mission that Katniss has sort of taken on to herself and, like, you know, brought a lot of the other Prime characters along the way with, to assassinate President Snow.
The Hunger League.
By the end of it, you're like, that whole mission was completely pointless.
Yep.
It served no purpose, and all you did was get a lot of characters we liked killed.
Yeah, fun. But it was awesome how they died.
It was fun to watch. No question.
Serving no purpose, I feel like, is my biggest problem with the character of Katniss from day one. It's like, the only purpose that we really have for her is to save her sister. Okay, fine, that's admirable, I can get behind that. Once she becomes the figurehead of this revolution, if you really think about it, she is the most passive participant in her own fucking revolution. Like,
right.
So much of what she's doing means absolutely nothing in the grand scheme. There is one thing that she takes it upon herself to do that actually makes a difference in the tide of this war. And spoiler alert, it's the very last thing she fucking does in the entire franchise.
I disagree. Like, I think it shows that you can be thrust into these things that you have no want to be in, and you probably have no business in, because the most significant thing she did in the three movies was say, I'm going to die rather than kill somebody that you want me to kill. Fuck you. And then the Capitol backs down. From there on, she's on a path that she has no control over. Well, world events shape her, and that shows how, as much as you want to shape your own life, world events are going to shape your life regardless.
Right, but my problem with that is that she's the heroine of the movie, and she's a pawn. But it's like, at the end of the day, we're still seeing the story through her eyes, mm-hmm. and that makes her a really ineffectual character to rally behind. If the whole movie is just other people manipulating her, yes, that sends a very strong message about the nature of war and the nature of politics, but we're still seeing the whole thing through her eyes, which is why in this movie, again, two of the biggest action set pieces happen off screen while she's nowhere near involved. And at the end of the day, I honestly have no idea, like, what her importance was other than to just be a propaganda piece, and that's just not interesting to me as a character that I have to follow through four movies.
It's also frustrating in the sense of we allude to she has her selfish mission, and at one point they even, once it's revealed that she had an ulterior motive and was like, yeah, I lied to you guys and I got all you guys killed, I'm sorry. Nobody calls her out on it. It's like, oh, we knew. We just... We just went along with you anyway, because
Because
why not?
Cool.
Well, maybe, you know, maybe they wanted to kill Snow too.
Yeah, or maybe they're like, you know what? A lot of us might die on this mission, including those two guys that you might date. So hey, I consider myself maybe third.
They're like, we don't want to introduce a conflict that's not about whose junk you want to ride on. So I mean, we don't want to complicate things
for you. But speaking of that, like that sequence where that sewer sequence, and that, especially when they're getting out of that sewer. A guy gets fucking digitized from what I can see. I think his name was Masala Walk or something.
Like, Masala Walk? Red shirt number two, that was his name.
The Indian restaurant here in Austin? but Elliot, I think that's a great jumping off point. I still can't get over the names in this fucking franchise. Oh. They all sound like streets in like a white gated community.
No, and because of that, the most ridiculous name for a character in this movie is Commander Jackson.
It's like, Dobbs? Wait, really? Wait, your name is just Dobbs. not Honeybee McCovered Bridge? Like, nothing?
It's like in Avatar The Last Airbender where they're like, oh, I saw a bear. You mean just a regular bear?
Not a bear bender?
not like a penguin bear or otter bear? No, just a bear.
And you got Gwendolyn Christie makes an appearance here as the character in Return of the Jedi who goes, like, many Bothans die.
Yeah, she's like, I was like, yay, she's in there. Where'd she go? She's busy as Captain Phasma in Force Awakens. You know,
she's the tallest woman in this, just tallest person in this movie, and she's literally there and gone.
I'm only like, the strong survive in the future.
I was like, we lose her?
For a second there, I thought she was talking about Ensign Ro Loren that was in this movie.
No, Ensign Ro from Star Trek was in this, but just long enough to go, like, every role I play now, I play complete, like, intractable hard ass. Oh, I'm dead.
It's like, they made me hate her on Battlestar Galactica, and I'm like, shit, I don't want to love again.
I think more than not, I mean, like, I come in the middle between Brian and Elliot ooh, it's all warm. like an Oreo cookie.
We're going to get this review pregnant.
on the issue you're talking about, because I think that, like, I see Elliot's point completely. Like, ultimately, that's kind of the point, that she is, she thinks she's more active in this than she is, but ultimately there are much bigger forces controlling her fate, and then when she finally is the one who makes that decision to possibly throw away her life completely to finally do something to really change her fate and the fate of the world, you know, it's like, no one's ever going to appreciate you for that.
But I mean, she doesn't even get to kill herself.
Yeah.
Like, after she keeps calling, she tries to kill herself.
But at the same time,
and doesn't get to.
It's frustrating to look back through all those movies and go, like, wow, so almost everything she was doing was kind of pointless.
Yeah.
She was literally just a advertising show. And I think there is a positivity to that on Elliot's side, and of realizing a lot of the times our heroes are just that. They're just manufactured images to sell an idealistic product.
But that is, to me, that's a one-book story arc. That is not a three-book, four-movie, like, epic. Like, to me, to make that point,
we get to worry about who she falls in love with.
Yeah, see, that's the bullshit that gets added on top of that, and that's the stuff that's just thoroughly uninteresting to me.
I definitely don't think it was as central to the plot as I think Susan Collins wanted it to be, but I found when I read the book especially when I saw the movie, the choice between PETA and Gale is not just a choice between two guys; it's a choice between two types of lives, two ideologies. Like, do I believe the ends justify the means in Gale? That no matter what, fuck it, I'm going to do what I have to do and fuck these people.
Or do I want to just lie on the floor a lot and be wounded?
No, like, but or for PETA, do you believe that you do need to have a little bit of forgiveness, and you can't just indiscriminately kill? And that was, like, the big undercurrent of this movie, right? Was, what do you do in war? And Gale didn't give a shit. He was like, look, I don't care if they all die. They killed my entire district, so fuck them.
And I feel like that point would have come across more if ultimately what we end up with is the most sterile relationship between two romantic leads. I'm sorry, that scene where he's like, you love me, yes or no? She may as well have been like that episode of Rick and Morty where, like, Morty's mom is like a simulation, and she's like, hello, Morty, going to work. Hello, Rick. Hello. Well, so robotic. It was like, I don't believe that you're in love with each other at all.
I do agree, because, like, there was a point where they should have jumped each other.
Yeah.
There's no chemistry between her and
Looked at each other.
No, yeah. At any point during these films, I never felt any chemistry between those actors. I wanted her to say fuck both of them. I'm going to date the older guy played by Woody Harrelson, Haymitch, who she actually did have great chemistry.
Hey, Haymitch was, him and Effie were getting it. We're getting it in.
Yeah, well, that was a little like, Haymitch, seriously?
Yeah. You have glitter all over your dick.
I don't want to be one of those, like, man, if girls wear makeup, whatever, guys, but come on.
It's pretty much like dating Mystique at that point.
Yeah. I think if fucking Effie would, like, your dick would look like a Fabergé egg when it was all said and done.
I'd be all right with it. Why wasn't Philip Seymour Hoffman in this film more?
You know what?
Did I miss something?
I will say it made me appreciate how well Furious 7 integrated Paul Walker digitally, because I couldn't tell at all. In this movie, I was like, oh yeah, I could totally tell that Philip Seymour Hoffman is not actually standing there. There's one scene at the end where they're like watching a video.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I was like oh my
force,
god.
He looks like a force ghost.
I mean, I guess the problem was he didn't want to come back to a movie with a heroine in it. That may have been a problem.
Good enough heroine in this movie for Philip Seymour Hoffman. Elliot with the most tasteless and best joke on the review.
That was harsh, man.
It was really
funny,
good.
But it was harsh.
Wow.
I just said,
wow.
He's like, I don't get it. What did I say?
Damn, son. Oh,
but to be, but full respect though. Like, if you look at the movies, he's pretty much the architect of all this shit. Like, just from the back end, like, apparently he knew that Katniss would kill Coin.
Oh, he's the Karl Rove in some ways of this series.
He's the Peter Baelish.
He sits back and goes, like, I'm going to wait and see who's ahead, and then I'm going to get on their side and always have a back door ready.
If this were Game of Thrones, Plutarch would be winning.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, man. I think overall I enjoyed this, like, probably second most of the movies. I think the second film was still my favorite of the series. But, if anything, I just felt like there were some lapses in originality in the scenes that are really good. Like, we talked about, like, what is a good sequence, which is these escaping through the tunnels with these descent-like hounds. It's like aliens meets
Your own thing.
I was like, okay, this is just a little too close to other people's stuff. It still was well-filmed and looked pretty good and was fun to watch, but it was like,
they use the same camera angles. Use the exact same camera. I remember that sequence with the auto gun. One that Vasquez puts on. And, like, they use the exact same shots when she's from Natalie Dorn from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
When she's, like, shooting. I'm like, you use the exact camera angle. Like, at least change the camera angle. Do something.
And not to mention the fact that those monsters kind of look like somebody left the vampires from I Am Legend on the radiator too long.
Yes.
Like, slightly toasted I Am Legend rubber vampires.
Yeah, they still look better than the I Am Legend.
Oh, that's true. Though. This is quite true.
CG has come a long way, thank God.
God, those things are so bad.
But, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to give my final thoughts on this here.
Oh, fine.
I just say that, like, I do think this is actually a lot more fun movie than the last one. Certainly, it actually is moving and is getting to the point and the stuff you wanted to see in the last one but never got a chance to. I think some of the stuff with PETA, who has, like, the idea, like, PETA has been programmed to kill Katniss, and he's kind of halfway broken from it, kind of not. Kind of, you're like, that's dragging on a bit too much throughout this. You're like, okay, we get it. It just seems like if there was anything left in him that would still do that, he would be incapable of even being near her.
Yeah.
Had a hard time buying into that. But I thought overall I liked this. I thought it suffered from when the fuck is this going to end syndrome, like Return of the King, in some ways, where it's like, okay, guys, seriously, there's like a 20-minute epilogue to this movie. You're like, get on with it.
That is kind of the one problem with anything young adult. It's like when it wraps up finally after so many books, it's like, well, we got to wrap up everyone's storyline, so this is where everyone's up to.
But I still give full credit to, like, the fact I think overall I really did like the way it ended. I do like that, unlike pretty much any other young adult series, and that includes Harry Potter, which I think is a wonderful series, it actually made me kind of think about the whole thing as a bigger whole and reassess it in terms of metaphor. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was interesting. I enjoy that quality of it. So I'm going to give it 8 out of 10, let's face it, better movies that Jennifer Lawrence will probably do later in her career.
Yeah.
JC?
I mean, as far as a young adult franchise, this probably is one of the better ones, and that, I mean, to some that may be like faint praise, and it kind of is, because, like, this now four movies, it's not something I would really go back and revisit. I do like the first and the second one. The third one slowed down the momentum a lot for me, and this one did kind of pick it back up, but for an investment of four movies, I don't know how often I'd go back and revisit this, and I place a lot of value in things that I can go back and revisit. And,
true.
Jennifer Lawrence has such a, at this point, in her young career, has such a long filmography at this point. Like, there's so many things I'd go back to rather than before I'd go back to this. But yeah, it's interesting, even compared to like the most recent trailer for the next Divergent movie. Like, this seems to be going in a better direction. It has to more of a concrete message.
Wait, there's another Divergent movie coming out soon?
Yeah, this doesn't even...
Did anybody even Allegiance. See the first Divergent film?
What is Divergent?
You don't even need to know.
It is a Walmart off-brand Hunger Games.
Oh, okay. This doesn't even more heinous thing than splitting up the last book into two movies. This is a franchise of three books, and they're doing four movies because they're just making up a whole brand new movie. Like, they're doing...
Whoa, what? They're just adding a chapter?
They're going off book.
Yeah, they're just, like, adding a chapter. But yeah, this is okay. Not super great. I would give it 6 out of 10, whatever the evil zombie things were.
Herman?
Well, you know, I've never really had any much affection for the Hunger Games film, with the exception of Catching Fire. But this movie, it did entertain me. I thought the action sequences were a lot of fun, even though they were borrowing from Aliens and things like that. Honestly, I thought, you know, Jigsaw might have been the games master for this Hunger Games film. But, you know, when it comes down to it, I was entertained. I had a lot of fun watching it. You know, I got a little teary-eyed when I saw Philip Seymour Hoffman, thinking, oh, this is his last film, and I feel kind of sad that, you know, this will be it. So,
and Elliot fucked it all up with his joke.
I can tell I bummed him out.
Yeah, a little bit. I was
so, you guys, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to bum
you out. No,
Elliot.
No, he's just one of my favorite actors of all time, but it's okay. It was okay.
Was.
It was okay. Thanks, Brian.
You're welcome.
Thanks, boss. Appreciate it.
You're
but,
welcome.
You know, when it comes down to it, I give this 7 out of 10, whatever the hell Woody Harrelson had in his head.
Elliot?
And not to bring it too much, and I thought about telling that joke, and I was like, I'm going to tell it, but I didn't mean to bring you down. Anybody who got brought down, I'm sorry about that. But, you know, to bring it back a little bit, after what happened on Friday, I've spent a lot of time on the internet since then, just reading, you know, world news and reading threads on like Reddit and forums. And there is this current of, if we just kill everybody, everything's going to work out. And I think we need more stories like The Hunger Games to show younger people that life is not as simple as what World War II films make you think they are. There's a very rare time where everybody's completely right and somebody's completely right, somebody's completely wrong. And those days almost always involve body counts, as I'm quoting West Wing now.
just go ahead and do the whole speech from that one great episode.
Yeah, no, but I didn't really realize.
Why is Elliot walking in a circle around your house as he's talking?
Elliot Sorkin is going to be... Aaron Sorkin is playing the role of Elliot today.
No, so I just love that speech. It must have crept in my head. But I just, like, movies like this, we need more of these, especially after like 30 years of Rambos and Under Sieges and all these movies I love. But we need to show people, like, through the literature and through film, that the world is not as simple as just bomb everybody and everything's going to turn out great and America wins and everybody gets blowjobs. That's not the world.
What?
So,
wait, I want
to
be in that
world. I did not sign up for a world that is not that.
So, just to bring my long-winded thing to a close, I'm just going to say I really enjoyed this movie. I enjoyed this series. I think it suffered a lot less from dragging on than the third. And for me, the second one dragged on a lot. It was a lot more to the point. And I would give this a 10, but I have to give it a 9. I have to dock it a few points because it does drag, even though it's trying not to. When it does get into, is she going to pick me? I don't know if she likes me. It drags just for that. It's like they stopped the movie, and I'm just like, come on. Somebody needs to die now. Come on. I know you can. So for all those reasons, and because I think it's an important story that if I ever have children, I'm going to make sure that they watch Hunger Games, give it a 9 out of 10.
And now, bringing our review to a close with his usual acerbic wit and anger, Brian Salisbury.
Wait, Philip Seymour Hoffman's dead? The fuck did that happen? Now, I get where you're coming from, Elliot, but I think my big problem here is that this franchise, not just this movie, but this franchise is all metaphorical sizzle and no narrative stake. And I feel like all of the points that you're making would have been so, like, those would have been solidified so much if the actual story was better. I mean, when you get down to it, yeah, there's a lot of things you can glean about the nature of war and the nature of politics and very, you know, lessons that you could teach in your English 101 class. But the problem I have with it is at the end of the day, the person who is kind of our entry point into all of these lessons is not a very strong character. And frankly, the ending of the movie, when she, you know, spoiler alert, ends up with PETA, that relationship just feels like I've resigned myself that there is nothing better. And I'm sorry, like, when you get to the end of all of this, and a character that's had all of these deep philosophical quandaries and had to make these tough choices and had to kind of serve as, you know, the paradigm for, like, the decisions we all have to make morally individually, so many weak decisions are made by her, like, culminating into this, like, oh, I've raised two kids with this guy that I, you know, kissed once, and then, like, the end of the movie is literally, like, we're not even looking at each other, like, I love you too. Flash forward to children. Like, it is just, like, really? That's all we get after all of this, after everything that she's set up to be. She's, like, at worst, she is a pawn for two very power-hungry tyrants, and at best, she's just kind of an ineffectual leader. She's great with a bow and arrow. That's, no one's debating that. But she's an ineffectual leader.
You know,
and somebody,
she's not standing here. She's not going to shoot you.
And somebody who's just like, yeah, I'll take whatever, you know, comes my way. This is the best there
she
is, I guess.
She should have said after she fired that fateful arrow, you have failed this city.
Yes! That would have been great.
That would have been great. So it's like, ultimately, like, when you have a character who's supposed to be, like, this revolutionary and this character who's supposed to represent so many tough choices and change, and then at the end of the movie just kind of resigns herself that, eh, I guess this is fine. Like, that to me is, like, the weakest possible revolutionary ever written. Like, I don't buy her. I'm not interested in her story. I don't think the movies did anything to flesh that out. And again, I just cannot forgive the fact that two of the most important things that happen in the tide of this war happen completely without her and completely, therefore, without the audience getting to experience it. And I don't know. For me, like, this is not my franchise at all. Like, I know I tend to go back to Harry Potter as sort of the benchmark for my fantasy franchises, but that's because I understood from day one, every step of the way, like, how Harry was important to this and how this was going to like, everything made sense and everything was working toward a very real, very difficult, and still very philosophical, satisfying conclusion, whereas this just kind of felt like it petered out. So I, for that reason,
oh, I've missed you, Salisbury.
I know, right?
Building towards that.
I know. I am going to give this 5 out of 10 Hawkeye quivers that never run out.
It is funny, like, in this one more than almost any of the others, like, you see she's got maybe 10 arrows in that thing, but there's a scene where she fires at least, like, 30.
Yeah. It's like the six shooter in movies that fires 30 shots. But you're like, wait a minute.
I love the one shot where she's, like, building one arrow, and it's like, one must equal 10.
Yeah. And what is she building them out of?
And to give credit to Avengers, like, there's a scene in Ultron where he takes something off of his leg and it extends into arrows. At least they try to hand wave it.
Yeah,
this one's just like, it's fucking, she got the fucking Infinity Cube in the playthrough on the 2D game. It's unlimited ammo. Fuck you, we're just gonna go. Don't worry about it.
It's the Infinity Gauntlet, Elliot. You know this.
I kind of wanted to see more of the Cat Lady, but that's just me.
Yeah, what the fuck? We didn't even talk about it. No, that's for another day. I'm too creeped out.
That's also for 4chan.
Nightmares forever.